So nearing the end of this lesson on transcending a religion of fear, we're in the last section. It is about transforming our experience of fear by transforming our experience of the enemy, the source of so much of our fear. I tend to have media blackouts on Saturdays because I have meetings in the morning and then I get my lesson done in the afternoon, and I try and have a non-engaged evening on Saturday. So there's not a lot of things that happen on Saturdays that I know about. So this morning, when I was just looking at my phone, I saw that this horrible thing has happened in Charlottesville, and I haven't had a lot of time to see all the details of it, just enough to know what we prayed earlier. There's, once again, the things that have been these well-trodden paths in our society are coming back and revealing to us the fractures that are in need of healing. So I ran into a quote I thought was helpful for today from James Baldwin. I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hates so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain. I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hates so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they'll be forced to deal with pain. The bad news is there's a lot of unprocessed pain going on, and consequently, there's a lot of hate going on. The good news is there is a way to process our pain. The good news is there is a pathway to go forward, and it's that pathway that this lesson points us toward. We've been exploring Jesus' teaching about loving the enemy. We've seen how demanding that part of the spiritual journey is. We've seen that nevertheless, our tradition doesn't let us off the hook. It's still our gig. It is our thing if we are followers of Jesus. But it is so demanding, we've seen, that it is not a good idea to launch onto it unprepared, because most of us cannot do it. We shouldn't try prematurely because we either have to fake it and then it doesn't work and then we give up, or it goes very, very badly and then we give up. So we shouldn't try to go at it before we're prepared to do it, but what we can do is we can undertake what we've seen is a three-part training regimen, ancient spiritual practices that will enable us to do tomorrow what we can't yet do today. We've been looking at several of those practices over many weeks, spending a lot of time on the getting ready to forgive part. We're only going to spend 1 week today on the actual forgiving part of the process, which kind of highlights how important the training regimen is. It is so important that we do the things that we can do today so that we can prepare to do things tomorrow. So today's focus is going to be on the second part of the training regimen, actually forgiving someone who has harmed us. It's the fourfold path to which we've alluded several times. It draws from the experience of those who have gone through the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions all over the world in the last several decades, but particularly in South Africa in the years after apartheid. Several times over the lesson, I've encouraged you to read this book, the Book of Forgiving? Yeah, the book of Desmond Tutu's book. These four steps are distilled from a great deal of hard-won experience by those who went through the work of these commissions. The four steps are: tell your story, feel your feelings, grant forgiveness, renew or release relationship. So let's start at the beginning. Tell your story. If you've done some of the worksheets in the self-awareness, self-disclosure process that we do, or if you've gone through some of the training, you know what we mean when we say the thing is hardly ever the thing. The thing under the thing, that's usually the thing. In the first lesson, afterwards in the discussion, a guy who's in manufacturing said, you know, when there's a system failure, we do this thing called the five whys. So we ask, why did the screen broke? Why? Well, because there was too much pressure on it. Why was there too much pressure on it? Well, it had to do with this manufacturing defect. Well, why did we have that manufacturing defect? And you go into, well, it had to do with the process when we were hurried. And so you ask five layers of why, looking for the thing under the thing. That is what we're looking for when we do this self-awareness process, because the thing is hardly ever the thing. The thing under the thing is usually the thing, or maybe even the thing under that, the thing under the thing under the thing. So when we try and tell our story of hurt, when we try to tell the story of our wound at the hands of an enemy, it's important to tell the most self-aware version that we can. Because when we hurt, we tend to fixate, and we fixate on our enemy's story. They cheated me. They cheated on me. They stole from me. They damaged my future. They corrupted my past. They did this because they are like this, or they are like that. They did this because they want this, or they want that. So when we're telling the story of harm that we've experienced at the hand of an enemy, that's an important thing. It's a starting thing, but it's not the thing. It's the thing we look under. It's the thing that we look under so we can begin to search for the thing. We want to tell as complete a version of our story as we possibly can, because when we are looking for a comprehensive understanding of our story, we are capacitating ourselves for the process of forgiveness. When we're doing these worksheets together over the time as a community, we've heard lots and lots of stories about harm done, lots of stories about wounds inflicted, lots of stories about hatred evoked. And the start of the journey to self-awareness is to tell that part of the story, the outward part of the story. He did this. She said that. He took this from me. Now I have to carry this thing because he forced it on me. But as we work through the questions on the worksheet. And by the way, I keep referencing the worksheet. You can find it on our website. If you go to resources under self-awareness, self-disclosure, everything is there. If we keep working our way through the questions, the story becomes more about my internal experience. More relevant to my story is not just how the episode happened, but how that episode impacts and interacts with a long-standing story that I've been carrying around for a long time. When she said this, and when he took that, this is the internal belief that it poked. This is the self-defense strategy that it stirred up. Doing these self-awareness, self-disclosure worksheets with trusted spiritual friends helps us tell a truer story, a more informed story, a more self-aware story of the hurt that we are preparing to forgive. So we tell an informed story. We talk it through with a trusted spiritual friend. We dig, we investigate, we probe, we explore, because it will be very difficult to forgive our enemies if we don't know the comprehensive story of the hurt that we have sustained at their hands. This is the reason that we've made that four-step process that I described to you a centerpiece of our community's life together. Until we know what's going on inside of us, we don't really know what's going on. We can spend all of our energies focusing on the thing, only to find out at the end it was never really the thing. So, step one, we tell an informed story of the hurt that we have experienced at the hand of our enemy. We tell it to a trusted friend, maybe several trusted friends. They listen carefully. They tell us back what they have heard so that we can hear it back. We write it down. Maybe we rewrite it. We explore the worksheet's 20 questions, going as deeply as we can. We tell our story. We tell an informed story. Second, we feel our feelings. More pointedly, we feel our hurt. We human beings, we tend to hide from our hurt. In a previous lesson, we've explored why our brains do that to us. They try and protect us from feeling overwhelmed. They try and keep us running smoothly by giving us some kind of an internal equilibrium so we can go out and kill the buffalo, so we can go out and do whatever needs to be done surviving on the Serengeti. And so our brains have adapted this incredible capacity to help us avoid feeling our feelings too deeply, especially the hard feelings, like grief, especially the hard feelings that come when we sustain a deep, wounding loss. Especially feelings that indicate that we're carrying around an intolerable story inside of ourselves. Because sometimes our feelings tell us that we're feeling deeply rejected. And that's almost intolerable. It's so painful. Sometimes our feelings are telling us that we're telling ourselves a story that we've been left behind, or that we are weak, or that we have been dismissed by someone that we deeply long to be accepted by. Our feelings indicate that there's an interior story going on sometimes that is just unbearable. So our brains give us an out. Our brains help us not look there. They hide the story deep in some inner resource, and they distract us from feeling our tough, demanding emotions. They do that for us so that we can just keep moving through our days, so that we can take care of what needs to be taken care of. But feeling our feelings is an essential part of the forgiveness process. We can't protect ourselves from our stories and from our feelings and also move more deeply into truth and life. It's in the knowing of our stories and the feeling of the rawness of our feelings that we are actually able to make our experiences our experiences. It's actually there that we get ownership of our own experiences. It's there that we take possession when we tell the story, when we see the story, when we feel the raw feelings. We take possession of our own stories. Ugly as they are, we begin to own them when we tell them and feel them. So we must weep, and we must hurt, and we must feel the shame. We must feel the diminishing that we would like to avoid. We must feel the terror. We must feel those feelings. It's an essential prerequisite to forgiveness. We can't forgive until we are in possession of our own stories, in possession of our own raw feelings. So part of the process of forgiving is doing whatever the interior work is to help us gain access to painful honesty and help us gain access to painful transparency, to help us unearth whatever is the thing that we would prefer to leave buried. It's how we heal. It's how we move forward. It's how we forgive. Actually, those who've gone through this before us tell us it's one of the primary ways that we change the narrative of our hurt. It's how we change our story. When we are wounded by an enemy, there is a victim and there is a victimizer. That's the full extent of the story. This process begins to give us access to changing, broadening, reframing the story that we tell. So, we can bury our feelings, but we suffer the consequences of doing it. We think that buried feelings go away, and they do from our conscious mind at least for a little while. But when we ignore them, when we don't process them, when we don't expose them to the light of the day, they don't really go away, but they change. And usually they become some new guideline for living that we follow. They become some interior narrative that says, people are like this. You are like that. The universe does this. No, the universe does that. Ignore them, and they don't go away. They just become something different. They become a guideline for how to live our daily lives. So, as guidelines, they begin to spread. They're like an infection. They spread to all areas of our life. As guidelines, they become like a cancer. They metastasize into other areas. Because when we don't unearth them and we don't feel them, and they become these guidelines for living, these new stories we tell ourselves, they affect our health and our families and our jobs and our friendships, even our faith. Our very ability to feel life and joy is affected by these stories. So forgiveness begins when we tell our stories and feel our hurt. That includes feeling shame, feeling diminished. We dig into the roots of our emotional rawness. Now, an important theme that was discerned by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was that harm, once done, is compounded by silence. Harm, once done, is compounded when shame causes us to suppress that harm. It's hard to tell our story. It's hard to feel our feelings. Now, of all the personalities, I think mine is a little more disposed than most to avoid feelings. But over the years, I've learned how to keep going at that. It's a challenge for me to keep going at that demand to feel my interior feelings. And eventually it happens. Eventually we are rehabituated. Eventually we are capable of doing what we could not do. Even in the small things in life, a child breaks a vase, and in the past we might have reacted. Maybe we would yell, maybe we would blame, maybe we'd smack her hand, all of which are pretty useless when it comes to training a child. But if we've been training ourselves to feel feelings, we've been doing worksheets with a trusted spiritual friend, we can do it. We can access our feelings much more quickly. Oh no, I love that vase. It was a gift from someone special to me. I'm very sad. We train ourselves enough, and our access to our feelings becomes more habitual. We don't have to sidestep our feelings. Even the big ones, we don't have to sidestep. When the big ones come, the grief that accompanies very big loss, especially traumatic loss, when we suffer the hurt at the hand of an enemy, even those when we feel betrayed or when we feel assaulted, those we have access to our feelings if we've been doing the training of feeling our feelings. But because we tend to ignore them so often, sometimes you have to watch for the secondary effects of feelings. Maybe your unfelt feelings will show up as tightness across your chest, or maybe they'll come roaring up as this surging energy when you're trying to calm down or go to sleep at night. Or maybe there are tears that are sitting right beneath behind your eyes when the situation isn't actually calling for tears. Or maybe there's an unusual tiredness, or maybe you're carrying a heaviness. Sometimes physical indicators tell us when we've been avoiding our feelings. So telling our story, our whole story, naming and feeling our painful feelings, grieving our losses. We really have only two choices when we suffer a wound at the hand of an enemy. We can withdraw from the hustle and the bustle of life long enough to face our loss and to suffer our suffering and to grieve our frailty and our vulnerability, or we can reject the whole thing. We can reject our suffering and we can avoid our vulnerability. We can focus outwardly on the wrongdoing of the one who has done us wrong. We can raise our fists and we can seek after revenge. We can do all that so that we don't have to feel those feelings. We don't have to tell that story. But it turns out that there is something in the weakness and the vulnerability that we feel when we feel those feelings that makes us strong, that makes us capable. So we start forgiving by telling our story. Again, trusted friends, hopefully a network of spiritual friends. We feel the feelings we tend to ignore. Sometimes we can do this easier with people who have experienced something similar but are strangers. That's why support groups are so helpful, because it becomes easier to be with someone who has shared what we've gone through. So now, after those first two steps, and only now, are we ready for step three. And now, at this point, we find ourselves able to make a choice, and we can choose to grant forgiveness. Having developed our forgiveness muscles using all of these strategies that we've talked about for these many weeks, doing the exercises that we've been exploring, we now find ourselves able to do something that we once could not do. Because we have been, as we've mentioned, practicing small acts of forgiveness with those who are dear to us. Because we have been, as we've mentioned, starting where we were, not starting where we weren't. Because we did start backwards, seeking our own forgiveness as opposed to seeking first to learn how to forgive. Because we have been praying for those who hurt us, as we looked at last week, and seen a more complete picture of their humanity, not just their bad act, but zooming out to see the larger frame of their goodness as well. Because we've become able to see not only our enemy's cruelty, but also their goodness. And because we've been able to see ourselves through the lens of our new vision of them and our expanded sense of solidarity, because we ourselves share weakness and we ourselves share failures, and we ourselves are capable of cruelty. Now again, we don't excuse the harm that has been done, we just put it into a broader context by being able to see it more broadly. But having trained in all of these getting ready to forgive exercises, we find ourselves able to do something that we once could not do. And so the day comes and we choose to forgive our enemy. We choose it because those who have gone before us testified that in forgiving, we free ourselves. We choose it because forgiveness helps our hearts stay open. We choose it because we don't want to be hardened inside. We don't want our souls to be infected. We choose it because those who have gone before us testify that in forgiving, we change the script. We create the environment in which authentic positive change can actually happen. We break up the hardened soil of the way it's always been. We choose to forgive our enemy because those who have gone before us testify that in forgiving, we do change our story. We make it a bigger picture than victimizer and victim. Forgiveness changes our narrative. Our story is no longer just about the bad thing that happened. Our story is no longer only about the pain or the hurt or even the story under the story. Our story is no longer about only the overwhelming feelings that we had been avoiding. Forgiveness alters the story, expands the story, broadens the story. We don't deny that the thing happened. In fact, when we forgive, when we choose to forgive, we can actually tell the story better. We can tell it more accurately. We can tell it more courageously. We can also tell it more compassionately. Again, we don't deny what happened. We just zoom out and see what happened in the broader picture of our shared humanity, us and our enemy. We look at this in a zoomed out perspective of our shared weakness, our shared capacity for cruelty, our shared capacity for both being carriers of light and being carriers of the dark side of our humanity. Choosing to forgive is an exercise in altering the meaning that we have assigned to the person or the event who harmed us. It's an exercise in zooming out to see the whole picture, the bigger picture. It's giving us the capacity to write a new version of the story because we can see more than we were previously zeroed in on to see. Several of the stories in the book emphasized this. But they also said changing the story doesn't change the anger. Changing the story doesn't change the sadness, the grief, or the heartache. Those don't always go away. But what it does do by telling a more complete version of the story is it makes us able to forgive even though the feelings are there. It makes us able to begin our own healing process. It makes us able to live our lives without having to zero in on the nurturing of the grievance again and again and again, as we saw. It helps us live our lives not oriented around hatred and not oriented around fear. But again, they emphasize, you cannot choose to forgive until you can choose to forgive. So it starts with the training regimen. It starts with doing strategic things that we can do today so that tomorrow we can do things that we cannot yet do. One storyteller in the book used the metaphor of a butterfly emerging from a cocoon. It's in the struggle with the cocoon the butterfly is enabled to fly. It is the training regimen that enabled her, she said, to be able to do this forgiving choice and step into the benefits that come with it. So we tell our story, the whole story. We feel our feelings, the bad ones. We choose to forgive. And finally, in step four, we decide to renew or release the relationship. The process of forgiving our enemies is an exercise in internal transformation. Consequently, we can't tell where we will be until we're there. We can't tell where we will be in regard to any kind of ongoing relationship with the enemy until we've gone through the transformational process because, again, it changes us. So the question of renewing or releasing the relationship can't really be decided until we're there. Because if we're deciding today, before we go through that, I'll tell you what the answer is. They're out of here. So we can't make the choice to renew or release until we've made the choice to forgive, until we've been able to grant forgiveness. And we can't do that until we can do that. We can't do that until we've walked through the process with the enemy, until we've spoken our words and told our stories and revealed our hurt and extended our forgiveness. Until then, we can't make the decision until we do that. We don't know who we're going to be after the transformational process. We don't know who the enemy is going to be after the transformational process. But when we have walked through the process, this is the final step to make this decision, renew or release. And we could do either and potentially never speak to the person again. In fact, our enemy may be dead when we decide to renew the relationship, to reopen our hearts to them. The forgiveness process can create wholeness and peace even in our memories. The forgiveness process can change our story. But when it's done, when we've gone through the process, there is still a choice set before us, renew or release. I'd like to talk a little bit about both, with the work required of both. When it's a close relationship, renewing is easier. It's harder to release a spouse or a sibling or a parent or a close friend because these relationships come with these binding threads that keep us together. It's easier to release when it's a stranger or an acquaintance or a neighbor because these people don't hold as much of our hearts. They're easier to release. But in both cases, it's still true that we human beings live in an interconnected web. So consequently, whenever possible, we do better if we don't break the web. Whenever renewal or reconciliation is possible, it is preferable. Releasing the relationship usually comes down to trust. I go through the transformative process. I do the training. I tell the bigger story. I feel the feelings. And finally, I make the choice to forgive. But after all that, I may still not trust that the person will not harm me again if given the chance. To release the relationship, I will have processed by then all of my ill will toward the person. I will have done all the forgiveness, but I still may decide that this person can't have access to my life lest they do me more harm. I may still decide that I cannot allow this person in their unhealthy state to have access to my head or to my heart anymore. At this point, it's not about retaliation. It is simply about making the decision for future safety. But again, to release is a loss. It is worth the work to try and reconcile. But again, it's a choice. And that choice is usually based on trust. Even after the transforming work of forgiveness, there is still the important question, will further harm be done if I stay in relationship? But there's also work involved if I renew the relationship. One of the quotes from the book that I appreciated said this, "If we renew the relationship, we do not make a carbon copy of what we had before the hurt. Renewing the relationship is a creative act. We make a new relationship. If we renew the relationship, we're signing up to build a new thing. We build on the old foundation, but we build a new thing. New patterns are required, patterns that factor in the experience of hurt that have gone on between us." So if we're going to renew the relationship after the harm has been done, there is also important work that we must do. And one of the most significant things we must do is ask for what we need. Maybe after the harm has been done, maybe after we have been through the process, maybe what we need is to know the truth of why the other hurt us. Maybe we need to know, why did they lie? Maybe we need to know, what are the details that were going behind the scene? Maybe we need restitution. Maybe we need to be restored for what was lost. Maybe we need an authentic expression of remorse. Maybe we need assurances that the thing won't happen again. Maybe we need a genuine apology. What we need to do to be able to decide moving forward or not is often ask for what we need. In fact, our decision to renew or to release may depend upon whether we get that thing when we ask for it. So there it is. Four steps that distill the accumulated wisdom of thousands of people. The wisdom of those who were seeking to follow after this teaching of Jesus, the words of Jesus. People who did it trying to navigate their way through the most traumatic kinds of human hurt and human harm, I do strongly recommend the book. And their wisdom is we tell our story, the whole story. We feel our feelings, especially the bad ones. We choose to forgive. And then we decide to renew or release the relationship. What became painfully obvious yesterday, and what has been painfully obvious for the last several years of our national life together, what's become painfully obvious around many water coolers at work, in many families, and in many neighborhoods, is that this is a moment in history that is crying out for people who are willing to take up the tread training regimen. This is a moment in our national life that is crying out for people who are willing to move into this demanding part of the spiritual journey. And I do pray it will be us. So Holy Spirit, may that be so in and among us. In Jesus' name, amen.